Johannes Brahms!
What?
Hello, America, how are you? Try the veal. And the espadrilles. What the fuck are espadrilles? I'm Jeff Heatherly.
I'm Nick Melton.
Welcome once again. I've done that. That's like the third time I've done that. To the original unoriginal podcast. We've returned after a 1 week absence because we're trying to get everything back on schedule.
Schedule.
Yeah.
After a 1 week absence.
What? That's right. We took a week and drank a lot of a medieval beverage that a lot of goths enjoy now.
Yeah.
And then jumped into a giant pill.
It's the Surreal Podcast.
No, that's I don't have a joke for that. Anyway, it's time to have a conversation.
It is.
Let's do like we do, Nick.
Boom.
You had a run-in with fame recently.
I did.
Boom, talk.
It was on Friday. It was on a crystal clear night, much like this one. It's not nighttime. It was the Friday before this episode was recorded, so yeah. I guess a week after this comes out, right? A week before this comes out.
Yes.
What happened a week after? I was...
Are you predicting the future, Meltonium?
I am. Can you just call me Meltonium again?
I'm telling you, it's a new thing.
It's the new thing.
Meltonium
followed
by
kids are doing it.
Some sort of other element. Meltonium bicarbonate.
Right. Anyway, I was asked to play a gig at the play piano for the 40th wedding anniversary or 30th wedding anniversary, a big decade number anniversary for the former chancellor of my school. And so I was over there. There's actually some backstory to this, but if I tell the backstory first, it will ruin the surprise.
Oh.
So I was over there, and I was playing my piano, and this woman comes up to the piano, and she says, "Your playing is very nice, thank you." I'm like, and I was doing that thing where I was doing where people would come up, and I would just sort of look up and smile and nod, like, appreciatively, like,
right,
thank
right.
you. And she's walking away, and I'm like, this woman looks very familiar. I've seen her somewhere. And I was like, holy crap, is that Rosemary Harris? Now, earlier, like last week or this week, I was in orchestration class, and my professor was like, you know Rosemary Harris lives in...
Boom, boom, boom. Muffins.
I'm like, why? Why would anybody live here? Like, especially if you're a Hollywood actress who's known for being in big things. Rosemary Harris, for those of you who don't know, is Aunt May in the Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, she is.
I don't know what else she's been in. This is probably, like, the only thing I've seen her in.
Right.
But anyway...
We're too young.
We're too young. And, anyway, for some reason, she lives in North Carolina. I'm not quite sure why. I mean, my town isn't exactly a sprawling scene of movie metropolitanism. Cosmopolitan movie-making area.
Metro-cosmo.
Right. I'm going to stop now before I make myself look like a total idiot. But anyway... I was sort of like watching her. She was wandering around the room, trying to figure out if it was actually her. And the more that she was there, the more convinced I became that she was. Because, you know, she has that really distinctive voice.
Yes.
And little like snippets of what she was saying, I could hear over like my playing and people talking. I'm like, that's got to be Aunt May. That's got to be her. So I get up to use the bathroom, the restroom, and I end up right behind her in the doorway. And she like looks at me and she's like, are you going to get a drink? And I'm like, maybe. And then she just sort of leaves and just sort of keeps on going wherever she was going. And I'm like, she didn't wait to see what I was going to say. She just sort of asked me and left, and she didn't introduce herself. And I was like, okay. I just got asked by Rosemary Harris for no reason if I was going to be drinking.
Well, you know, with great alcohol comes great responsibility.
Yeah. Maybe. People have been asking me if I was going to be drinking all evening. Like, that just, they seemed obsessed with it. Like, are you going to have, like, some wine? Like, no. Like, I'm...
You don't drink
working.
When you're on the job.
Well, I could. I thought about it, but, like...
You need a brandy snifter full of scotch.
Yeah.
Just sitting
not,
there...
Not brandy?
No, fuck brandy.
Right.
She's a fine girl. She's a fine girl!
But, anyway, she left eventually.
We're just going to keep doing that.
We are going to. She left pretty soon. I don't know how long she was there, but I was talking to the hostess, the woman who hired me to do the game, like, This is going to sound kind of weird, just asking this randomly, but was that Rosemary Harris who was here earlier? Because I had to know, because I was still, like, not 100% convinced. Like, why would she be at this random party in the middle of downtown? And she was like, yes, it was, and I was really surprised to learn that she lived here, and we've become really good friends recently. I'm like, I thought I recognized her. So, yeah, I kind of met Aunt May from the Spider-Man movies.
How about that?
How about that?
They can't see my jazz hands.
They can't. But anyway, that's my brush with fame.
You've had a couple of brushes with fame. We've both had a few brushes with fame in recent months. What was the one we had a couple of months ago where you told a story?
I don't remember.
No, it was the thing about the priests at the thing.
Oh, and that's not nearly as interesting. Just a local newsman.
Yeah, that's a local newsman.
It was just in a priest convention, which was odd.
From local Channel 8, Dirk Breadbasket.
Yeah, basically. You know? Only I would know who he is, or people from my area of the neck of the woods.
Right.
But yeah.
You met Aunt May.
I did.
She complimented your music. And
she
then
did.
Wondered if you wanted a beverage.
And then left.
Elderly actresses.
She looks great for her age, though.
Oh, she certainly does.
Like, I kind of tower over her, which is, I guess, isn't here nor there. I just something I noticed, like, I'm taller than Aunt May.
You sound so superior, like, I'm taller than Aunt May.
Basically.
I don't know why I took it that step further.
Sipping on gin and juice.
Laid back. With my mind on my money and my money on my mind. I have a question for you.
Yes.
This was actually, I didn't talk about this before we went on the air, so you don't know this is coming. Do you have in your phone pre-made the text Word just to respond whenever it's appropriate?
No.
You don't?
No.
I keep, every now and again, you know, I'll send you a text and you'll respond with Word. And, but like lately, whenever you do it, it comes up as duplicate, as though it's something that you've sent before.
Why?
I don't know.
Is it because you have multiple texts from me that just say the same thing?
No, actually, I checked into that. There's no more texts in my phone that say words. I was like, does he just have like a template that says Word?
No, I don't. I type it individually every time.
Why is his phone, Josh Peck, having an orgasm in the Whackness? You've never seen the Whackness.
No.
Stephanie Z. Carnes, I know it's the Media Magazine. You're going to subscribe now. She will get that joke. And as will Greg Green. And Christina Dorsett, if she listens to this show. I don't know if she does.
I don't know either.
But speaking of all of those people, segue!
You had a story now.
Two of those folks were involved in my activities this weekend. We're recording this on November 1st, so how about that? How about that, man? And 2 days ago...
You're inside me right now! How about that?
I don't even want to explain that. I just want to let people deal with it. But it is a reference to something. I think we need to say that for safety's sake and then move on.
Right.
It is a reference. Anyway, two days ago, I journeyed with dear cousin Stephanie C. Carnison, host of Media Monkeys and Junkie Junkie. Subscribe now. And two of our acquaintances, Christina Dorsett, who... we've mentioned on the show before. Has she been on an episode of either of our shows?
I don't think she hasn't been on mine.
I'm surprised she hasn't. She's one of the regular gang of folk. And our dear friend Sarah Griffin, who was the news director, still is the news director at the radio station at which I used to work. They all had costumes. I didn't. Because I wasn't like, because it's, you know, it's October 30th, and I wasn't just like, I've been Clark Kent. Like, 4 out of the last 5 years. And I just decided I don't want to do that again. But at the same time, I just didn't feel like doing anything. So I went without a costume, and so I started to get nervous. Like, oh, shit. I'm the guy without the costume. I'm going to get some shit for this from the Rocky Horror people. And I haven't even told the story. So now it's like, what's this about Rocky Horror? I'm going to tell you. I'm not telling this story very well. We're traveling to a city a bit lower in our state, where they're doing what they call a shadow cast of Rocky Horror Picture Show. Rocky Horror Picture Show, of course, most people know, it's a popular film of cult films. You know,
it's like the ultimate cult movie.
It is the ultimate cult movie.
I consider like Forbidden Zone more of like the ultimate cult movie, just because it's so much more
and
strange.
So much fewer people know about it.
Right. I mean, Rocky Horror is like as mainstream as cult movies get,
yeah.
Which is the only reason why I would call it the ultimate cult movie, just because it's the one everyone knows.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, it's a classic in its way, and it's an enjoyable watch when you need to watch it, you know. But anyway, it's one of Stephanie's favorite movies, and she was in a production of it. A lot of the stage show, like a horror show, she was in that in high school in her hometown. This was years ago, but anyway, she had a whole week of Rocky because a number of her castmates from that production, they did a production in the center of our state, and then she was called through some connections with various people to be Janet, play the Susan Sarandon part in the Shadow Cast in this town at the lower part of our state. So we all gather in the car and we drive about an hour and a half to the place where there's a theater, and they did that. Now, have you ever been to like a real theater, like a movie theater screening at Rocky Horror?
Yeah, I went last Halloween. It was in the town. Not
the
his town. Your town.
The town.
Well, yeah, the town. And it was this really big theater downtown, like the kind of theater with like a balcony.
Right.
I forget what it was called, but it didn't have a shadow cast or anything, but it was a huge theater and people were there and like they were screening like beforehand, like the Thriller video and whatnot. So it was fun. It was I was sitting right behind someone who had clearly been to a lot of them and knew all the lines to yell at the screen. So it was kind of fun. Like, I enjoyed myself.
You had a good experience. Our good friend Sarah Griffin, who I mentioned, she was telling us about one she'd gone to in another town. I gotta pause for a moment to point out how ridiculous our anonymity is sometimes.
The town, a town, another
yes,
town.
Hometown, yes. Next hometown, next town. The town that's south of the thing.
Yeah.
All the towns.
Although I let my town name drop earlier.
I heard it. It's gonna be bleeped.
Muffins?
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be muffins.
There will always be muffins. Muffins!
Imaginary muffins!
Damn right. I was about to say, when's the last time anyone's watched Cunningham Muffin? It's been too long.
It has been a long time.
Anyway, we went to this this thing. And I got to tell you, I'm a virgin, as they call them.
Or
I was a virgin of those that situation. So, of course, I was nervous because I'm a puss. But that's just, you know me. But we went, it was an interesting experience, I'll say that. But I could have gone to a different one.
Right.
And I don't mean any disrespect. I'm going to preface this by saying, and she knows it, I've told her, she's wonderful. Stephanie did a great job. She was the one person in the cast that we saw who, like, really stuck to her character. Like, you know, I mean, I know it's just a fun thing that they do in front of the screen, and they got the flashlights and people yelling lines, but she was the one person of that entire cast who, like, you know, the way they did it was, when they were, you know, what was happening on the screen, like, if it was, like, say, it's, you know, a later scene in the movie where, you know, you got, you know, Susan Sarandon and Barry Bostwick and Dr. Scott over on the right, and they're, you know, in their underwear and shit, and then Tim Curry's in the center of the screen, and they do a close-up of his face. They would take the flashlight and shine it on the person playing Frankenfurter, and then over here, then they'd be over here in the darkness, but Stephanie would still be, like, emoting. She would still be janiting. You know, it was
right.
It was really great. She did a fantastic job. That being said, it was an interesting experience. I mean, it had a lot of the classic trappings of the live theater experience of Rocky Horror that you hear about, like, there was, I mean, people were throwing shit, and people were yelling the lines. But there were a couple things that it needed to be taken issue with. One, I mean, listen, I know that this is a common thing. They do it all across the country, and, you know, it depends on which region you go to. There will be regulars, and there will be people who are used to the way the system works. But I gotta tell you, like, I felt extremely uncomfortable for a majority of the experience, because it felt kind of like a mix between, like, a corporate retreat and, like, at times a KKK rally, but solves the racism.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I mean, it was just, like, it kind of, I didn't like, I mean, there was an inside joke that I wasn't getting, and it didn't have anything to do with the fact that I hadn't been to a Rocky Horror screening before. It was just a very local, like, this is our bunch of people, they're going to know what we're talking about. And I just didn't like that. I feel like if you're going to do something like that, When there aren't that many in the state. I mean, there are some, and there are a couple of major cities throughout our state. But if you're going to do a thing that's going to kind of attract people from so many distances, you know, universalize it. Don't make people feel left out, you know? Not just saying that as a former virgin of the show. I'm just saying, like, you know, it kind of felt very inside. And almost, as one person put it, you know, kind of incestuous in a weird way. Like, it was kind of creepy. And somewhat pedophilic, because there were a lot of young people that probably didn't belong in there. It was a very strange experience. I'm not like a prude or anything. I don't really give a shit about kids being corrupted because sometimes they need it. But I'm just like, sometimes some things were happening in there and I was like, oh, this makes me feel weird. But that wasn't like they were good folk. They were nice people. But also there were these two fellas. I told you about this earlier. Like, I mean, of course everybody yells stuff at the screen. It's a common thing. People do it. And that's fine. Like, with the standard code words, you know, say it, sucking and fucking, you know, all that shit, you know, and that keep doing that, that's fine. But there were these two dudes, one posted on the left side of the room, and one posted on the right side of the room, that were basically doing, like, really bad, pre-programmed, like, pseudo MST3K kind of shit. Where it wasn't so much, like, they would yell out the standard lines, but in addition, they would just be, like, just doing shtick in the middle of everything that most of the time fell to the floor with a thud, because it wasn't funny. And they were very loud and kind of drowning everybody out, and you could tell that the audience was like, oh, these guys are like the pros, we better not say anything, and it was just like, I didn't like that. I didn't like the fact that, like, I mean, for this kind of experience, I'm a one-time goer at this point, but I'm just like, I feel like as an audience member, it should be a full-on audience experience and not these two, like, semi-pros off to the side doing comedy shtick. You know, I didn't like it. I did not like that. But, I mean, it was interesting. I mean, the movie's fun, and we had a good time, and you know, we yelled stuff out, we sang songs, it was a dandy time, but, you know, I just, you know, it was kind of... It was too personal for those people,
right?
Who were there, who were regulars, and not enough for like the general audience. And it kind of put me off. I gotta be honest. But like I said, they did an okay job. But there was some casting issues. But the one we gotta point out, the fellow who played Rocky. You know, people know Rocky. He's, you know, he's very Germanic. You know, he's, you know, built and six-pack and tanned and muscled and blonde hair, blue eyes. You know.
Aryan guy.
Very Aryan guy, yeah. And the guy they picked, my God, he was like, he was about as fat as I am. Wearing, like, glittery gold bicycle shorts. And he had the hairiest ass crack in the history of humans. And literally every time he would move, his shorts would start to go down. And so I swear, like, and Stephanie encouraged me before we started going, and she was like, you know, if you just feel something, if you like feel like yelling something out, that's encouraged too. And I never got the right moment to do this because at one point I just wanted to scream out, Rocky, say no to crack! But I didn't do it, and I feel bad about it.
Well, the moment wasn't right.
The moment was never right. That was the problem. But, I mean, it was my first experience in that situation. And it was all right. It was all right. I might do it again sometime if the possibility presents itself. But, I mean,
it's a fun experience.
It's a fun experience. But, I mean, there were certain facets of that particular one that I was just like, you know, this is probably a little too local specific, a little too like for the regulars, not enough for like the outside folk.
Right.
I know that like as a virgin, you're just always an outside person, but at the same time, like I said, you need to be welcoming. And I mean, the cast themselves were welcoming. They were very nice. They were very personable, but it was just a matter of like certain things about it just really felt very, this is the way we do it for the locals and just suck on it. And I didn't like that.
Right.
I didn't particularly care for that. I will say this, and I'm going to come out about this, and I feel bad about it, so if anyone has been talking about this, you know, in conversations, did you see Jeff not do that? I'm kind of on the same side as you. I feel like I was a dick here. During the dinner scene, when they, you know, like dinner, Dr. Scott, and they pulled the thing off, and, you know, Eddie's
Meatloaf
is in the thing. during that scene where it's mostly dialogue and it kind of slows down for a bit, the whole cast kind of stood in the aisle, but it was a stadium seating theater, so they stood in the aisle between the front seats and the actual stadium seats.
And we, my the folks that we were with, we were sitting in the third row from the bottom, and they started calling out, you know, if you've been to a movie screening version of this movie so many times, sit down until it whittled down to one person, to one time, or none, and I sat down. And it turned out to be, you know, a pledge.
Right.
About, you know, not being a virgin anymore. And I feel bad about it because I didn't participate. And I know people saw me not participate. And I felt bad about it for the past few days. I'm going to come out about it. I felt bad about it. But at the time, I don't know. I felt very uneasy. I didn't. Stephanie kept assuring me before we went, she was like, you know, they're not going to rape you, Jeff. And I'm like, I know. but, like, I wasn't, like, fearing that. I was just like, I don't know. I don't know. It was a judgment call. And kind of a dickish one. And I do apologize if I offended anyone. I just, you know, I don't know. I wasn't feeling it in that moment, but I do regret not having done it. So understand that if given the chance again, I would absolutely stand up to the pledge. Unfortunately, certain parts of the pledge did not apply to me, and it did kind of bother me, because I'm like, I don't know all the words to Monty Python and the Holy Grail, because I think that's an overrated movie. I've said it before. Have I said it on the air before? No, but I probably just lost some listeners because of it. I'm not going into that today. I'm not going into it. I just think Holy Grail's overrated. Let's move on to a different topic, because I'm losing listeners as we speak.
I thought you said you had a few TV-related tragedies you
wanted to discuss. I do have a couple of TV-related grievances, and you have not been talking enough, Nick.
I had nothing to say. That was your story. That was your moment to shine.
No, but mosher it up, bitch. Come on. Okay, anyway. We'll talk about a couple TV tragedies. We'll start with one that's kind of short and just kind of sad. Sci-Fi announced last week that they are canceling Caprica with 4 episodes left in its season 1.5. And they're doing something very odd. They aren't going to just, you know, keep airing the 4 episodes, just burn it out. When they have no other new shows to put in its time slot, they're just pulling it from the air. And the big implication right now is that they're just going to air the last four episodes at some random point next January.
Why?
No idea. There's no good reason for it. The implication is either that's going to happen, or they're just going to release them exclusive to DVD, which the DVD may or may not be coming out sometime in December. But we haven't gotten any confirmation on that. But it's such bullshit. In addition, when you consider the fact that the week before, Sci-Fi announced that they are about to produce a pilot for another BSG spinoff called Battlestar Galactica Blood and Chrome, which is set when William Adama is in his 20s and is like a Viper pilot. And I'm like, if you're going to do that, you should keep Caprica. There's no reason to cancel Caprica but get that. Like, if you're concerned that Battlestar Galactica-related properties aren't making you money, why are you going to cancel one that's fantastic and people love to make an untested one that people kind of don't care about anymore? You know?
I didn't realize people liked Caprica so much, except for, like, you and Greg.
I mean, ratings-wise, it certainly doesn't speak well of itself, because the last episode that aired only had, like, 850,000 viewers, which is pretty low, even for cable, but still then, it's a fucking sci-fi show. They put it on Tuesday nights at 9, when I'm pretty sure stupid people are watching Glee or something, and I'm just like, you know, it's... I mean, I know it's weird for me to be coming out so deeply in defense of the show and, like, you know, really sad about this, but considering that I didn't start watching it, like, seriously until about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Like, I watched the entire first season on Hulu over the course of, like, a month because they were rolling them, like, every so many days. They should put, like, for the next 4 episodes and so on until they finished. So I watched all of season 1.0, and then season 1.5 starts. I'm loving the shit out of it. And then the thing happened on Twitter a couple weeks ago that I talked about with Alessandra Torresani, adorable lady. And that was a good day, and Greg has been, you know, having tweet conversations in a fashion with Jaina Svendsen. I mean, crazy shit is going down. This show is coming into our hearts and, you know, appreciating us as nerds like no show ever has. You know, like, I've never had this kind of interaction or felt this loved by a show, and right, they're going to take it away from me. And it pisses me off. It really does, because there is no logical reason to just stop airing it entirely. Burn off the last 4 episodes while it's still running so that you might, like... there's no reason.
Do you think perhaps it was a question of people involved with Caprica couldn't be involved with both like with more than one show at a time?
It's not even that, because
I know Jane Espenson is going to work on an HBO show called Game of Thrones.
She's also going to be one of the writers of the next season of Torchwood.
Yeah, and is she going to work on Game of Thrones then?
I don't know about that.
Oh, I'm going to check that, because I know I'd read her for Torchwood, but I might have been making that up.
Well, actually. I mean, but anyway, the point is, there's really no explanation for not airing the last four episodes right now. Like, so they've got nothing else to put there.
Yeah, she is working on Game of Thrones.
Okay.
So she's going to be working on those two shows.
I mean, she's a busy lady. She always has
been. And I mean, so if she was busy for that, they'd be like, oh crap, we wouldn't have time for this big writer, like, the big writer, you know. We'd have to get, like, a new writers or whatever. And then, if they were making a whole new BSG series and they wanted to bring a lot of that over, they're like, oh, we just don't have the budget and the time to do... I don't know, I'm just trying to come up with some sort of reason that doesn't sound quite so...
Well, I mean,
it just got the ratings, so we pulled the plug.
No, I'm fine with you. That's an okay explanation for why they're canceling it. I want an explanation for either whether they're just not showing the four episodes that are left. That is what's illogical. There's no reason not to.
Right.
Like I said, they've got nothing else to put in that time slot. In the meantime, why can't they just burn off the last four episodes? There's no reason not to. And it's so unceremonious. Like, the writing was kind of on the wall. Last week, and I got a little twinge, like, this is strange, because after last week's episode, there wasn't a preview for next week's episode. I was like, oh, shit. 2 days later, they cancel it. Like, I'm just like, oh, okay. But I don't understand the pulling it off the air. I don't. Like I said, the debate is in the air right now. Either, like I said, they're going to air them, like, en masse, like, in one night, kind of the way they did the last four episodes of Arrested Development. Just one night next January, or they're gonna just save them just for DVD for season 1.5, which may or may not be out by mid-December. But it bugs me. It's just, I know it bugs me more because I just got into it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's weird, because traditionally, if you just got into something, it wouldn't hurt as much. But it really hurts, because I like the show. There were personal touches. Zoe Greystone loves me too. You know, as a nerd, as a creepy-ass nerd, that means a great deal to me. And Greg's talking to Jane Espenson. I mean, this is a beautiful time. Ah, crap. But the other thing that disappointed me, if we want to change topic, because clearly we need to, I think I've said my piece, unless you had something more to say about Captain.
Nope. I never watched it, so...
Okay, well...
I don't really have an opinion on
it. The next disappointment we've got to talk about... And I will go ahead and preface this by saying that, I mean, my negative feelings about this have waned and have, you know, cooled down since. But, did we ever mention it on the air, or has this just been in private conversation?
I don't know.
Okay, well, we definitely have mentioned on the air, though, that I am a big fan of Community. I think it's, I'll put it now, I used to think it was the best comedy on TV right now, even above 30 Rock.
Right.
Me and Community are kind of on the outs right now, because I kind of told you about this 2 weeks ago. I called you on the phone. We were having a long conversation while I was on my back porch back home, and we were talking about random shit, and I brought this up about how I'm kind of nervous about this Halloween episode they're going to do with this, you know, zombie theme. Because I was like, and I said, and you remember, I said it to you right then, if there's not a logical explanation, we have a problem.
Right.
So last week's episode, as most people or some people will know, Community did their Halloween special, which was the plot is they're having, you know, a Halloween party at the community college, and through one fashion or another that I'll explain in a minute, there's a zombie outbreak, and the main cast of the show has to survive the night, and there's your show. Now, when you hear that about a show like Community, that while it has had some pretty wacky concept episodes, I mean, the two most popular episodes everyone always talks about are two episodes from last season called Contemporary American Poultry and Modern Warfare. Contemporary American Poultry was an episode that was about... It was basically a Goodfellas parody, but about, like, you know, a chicken finger mafia for the chicken fingers in the school cafeteria. That was funny, and it was an interesting idea. I mean, the show has always been, not meta, I wouldn't use that term, but it's always been about, like, this is, like, it knows that things are referenced to things, and there's a character, Abed, who's this Muslim kid who's clearly got Asperger's, but he's, you know, he's always bringing up, like, movie references. He's obsessed with movies, you know. It always happens. So that's, it's been a running thing, So they did that, and then Modern Warfare, which is an episode where there's a paintball war on the campus of the college for priority registration at the school. Like, if you win the paintball war, you get priority registration. And so they did that episode, and they were both fantastic. And they just came out of nowhere. They weren't expected. They weren't, like, you know, promoted, like, oh, we're doing this crazy thing. It was just these two amazing episodes of the show that had been great, but it had been very standard sitcom fare in its own twisted little way for, you know, the whole rest of the season. Then they come to season two, and they realize they're riding high on the success of Modern Warfare and contemporary American poultry. And so they say, and so basically I can just see, you know, Dan Harmon, the creator, I can just see the wheels turning in his head where it's about, you know, these two have been our most successful. And I mean, I understand him for the most part. Like, you know, these two have been our most successful. We should try to build on that success. But not by, like, oh shit, we've got to top it every fucking week. You know, it's unnecessary. And I mean, I've had some doubts, I've had some concerns about this show since the season started. You know, their season opener, they've got Betty White guest starring, and you say you've grown tired of Betty White. I love Betty White, but I agree that, you know, she's...
Well, I didn't mean, like, I've grown tired of her. I just think that she's kind of overexposed right now.
She is right now. I mean, she's great, and I'm glad that people, like, you know, even the young people are getting behind her, and that she's, you know, getting a lot of, you know, notice, but... I'm getting, like, I just don't like stunt casting, really. Most of the time I don't like stunt casting, and I don't like, you know, doing something for the sake of that.
Right.
I don't know how to put it, but you know what I mean. Like, I don't like the fact that, oh, Betty White's very popular right now, she's on SNL, and she's just, you know, an American treasure. Let's put her on this episode as a violent anthropology professor. You know, like, I mean, it was funny, but it sort of was like, oh, you thought you got to do this now. Okay, show. Second episode of this season wasn't that bad. Third episode, I think we're up. I think this is the fourth episode. I may be forgetting an episode. No, I am forgetting an episode. Second episode of the year was a simple episode, a classic style Community episode where it's just about the comings and goings of college. Third episode was an Apollo 13 parody where the main cast gets stuck in this RV. That is a, like, space simulator. That while they're inside, it accidentally gets towed. And the problem is, like, the door is locked, and the only way they can get out of the thing to see where they are, where the tow truck is taking them, is to, like, play through this simulation. And it's sponsored by Kentucky Fried Chicken, and it's from, like, 1978. So there's, like... I mean, it was funny. It was funny. I'm not going to dispute that. It was fucking hysterical. But at the same time, I was like, why are you doing this again? The next week, we have this episode that is, the plot is, Abed, the character I talked about, the kid with Asperger's, like, he references movies all the time, and he kind of thinks that he lives in a movie. You know, he's kind of like me, but to a very strange extreme. The episode's about, there's like another character, Shirley, this big black lady, she's, you know, she's very religious, she's very Christian. And she wants to use, you know, modern technology in films and stuff to make Jesus hip again, you know? So she kind of takes, you know, Abed under her wing and decides, you know, she wants him to make this little short film to make Jesus hip, you know? And so it's from there, he's like, you know what we could do? It's a movie, then a movie, then there's another movie. Then another movie, and it's about, you know, God's watching this movie, and I'm making this movie, and God's controlling this movie, and it's like, it was just like... And then in the end, like, it gets kind of crazy because then, like, he starts thinking he's Jesus, and like the students start like worshiping him. He's like in this tower next to the flagpole, and it's just like, it's a bit much. I mean, not like, I'm not like saying I'm offended. I'm not like that's not the tack I'm taking here. I hate religion. Put it in the books. But I'm saying, like, my problem is, like, they would not have done this last season. There's no logic to him being up next to the flagpole. There's no logic to it. You know, there's no logic to the students, like, you know, zealously following him as, like, this Christ figure. It's just, like, they've taken... like, Dan Harmon, as I mentioned before, he was a co-creator on the Sarah Silverman program.
Right.
And that was a very wacky show. I told you about that episode a few days ago where Sarah Silverman sues a VHS copy of Home Alone. Like, I'm saying, like, that show's wacky, and that show is allowed to be wacky because it's fucking Sarah Silverman. This is Community, where you spent the majority of season one. I mean, yeah, it was kind of a typical sitcom, but at the same time, one of its greatest strengths was how it would buck sitcom conventions. But it didn't have to use these gimmicks to do it. It just didn't go where usual sitcoms go. Like, this is a spoiler. If you haven't seen season one and you don't care to be spoiled, stop listening here. For once, I'm going to say it's okay. You know, you can stop listening here. But at the end of season one, like, one of the running things this season has been that Joel McHale's character, Jeff Winger, has been in this kind of love triangle with the girl he started kind of going to class with, this girl named Britta, and then this professor that he's been dating, Professor Slater. And they have this big dance at the end of the year, and like in the middle of the dance, Professor Slater and Britta like kind of give him an ultimatum, like which one is he going to pick? And then he leaves the dance and goes outside, and there's another character, Annie, played by Alison Brie, who's also on Mad Men, and like, you know, she's been saying that she might be leaving town for whatever reason, and then all of a sudden they just start making out, and you're like, oh shit, curveball. That's fine. That's fine because I'm like, oh, nice. You know, you've taken the stupid Ross and Rachel bullshit and turned it into something that I've not seen before. You know, but you did it without like being explosive or ridiculous. But but the problem is, like, that was good. But this season is no more explosive, more ridiculous. These things cannot feasibly happen. And then we come to the Halloween episode after all that pomp and circumstance. The Halloween episode. So, the plot, like I said, I wanted logic. I don't feel that I got it. Because it's Halloween, like, so they're having this Halloween party, and everybody's there, and the dean of the school, who's this, you know, kind of, asexual character, he's very funny, he buys food for the party, through an army surplus. So, like, all the food on the, you know, snack tables is, like, army rations. But then there's also taco meat, I put that in quotes. Everybody keeps talking about this taco meat. And somebody starts to get sick, and they're like sitting down, they're sweating, and they're like, oh, I think he's got food poisoning from the taco meat. And then the dude bites Chevy Chase's arm. And, like, literally bites into him blood. And I'm like, whoa, like, what the fuck, man? And even then, I'm still like, okay, keep going on food poisoning. I'm actually willing to accept this if you keep saying it's food poisoning. No, they just keep going. Chevy Chase bites someone, and then it becomes an outbreak in a matter of minutes. And then all the main cast, except for Chevy Chase, goes into, like, this one hidden room in the building where they are. And they're all, like, standing and waiting for the thing. But the point is, like, from here on out, it becomes, you know, it's like, you know, were you bitten? And, like, one person's hiding, they were bitten on the ankle, and they're like, they don't want anybody to know. And then they start to zombie out, and everybody starts running, and it's a whole thing. It's the traditional zombie survival concept. But it doesn't work with this show. But I'm still on board. I'm still on board. Kind of. Because then they do this bit where, like, they go down the basement. All the remaining people left at this point are Joel McHale, Donald Glover, who plays a character named Troy, and then the aforementioned Abed, played by Danny Pudi. And they're downstairs of the basement of this building. And they come around this corner, and, you know, the old spring-loaded cat. A cat jumps across the screen. I was like, ah! And then, like, they keep walking, and then it jumps back across the screen. And then again. And it keeps happening, and they're like, what is wrong with this cat?
That sounds awesome.
That was fucking hysterical. I was laughing so hard. And then, but then, you know, after that respite, we're back to this stupid shit where the zombies coming downstairs, they take Joel McHale, and then it's down to Donald Glover and Danny Pudi. Danny Pudi, you know, Abed, you know, he sacrificed himself because him and Troy are best friends, and he's like, you know, go, you're the last one. You can be the first black man to survive a horror movie. And, like, I mean, that was cool. And then, I love, you know, Troy's climbing out this window of the basement while Abed's, like, letting the zombies hoard on him. And Troy turns around and he's like, I love you. And Abed's like, I know. Like, I love that shit. But in the context of, like, logic, I love it. And he goes outside and he's talking to the dean. And then he decides, oh, there's only one way I can stop this. I've got to go inside. The one, like, thing, there's one, like, a recurring character who's, like, Joel McHale's nemesis, who's this guy who, like, has, like, these doctorate degrees and all these things just to show off to women. And he explains that what he thinks is happening, it's true, is that, like, part of the problem with the zombies is that it's too hot in the building. And that they need to turn on the air conditioning, and if they do, it'll cool off the frontal lobe and they'll stop being zombies. So Troy is the last one left, and he goes out to talk to the dean, and he decides to go through the barricade, and he came dressed as Ripley from Alien when she's in the like yellow robot thing. So he comes in and it's made of cardboard. I mean, this was funny. He comes in the door and then the zombies start hoarding on him and he's like, why did I think this would work? And like, I have to think about it. I mean, there, like I said, there are great moments, but it's still like, just, it just irks me. And then he goes across he starts crawling across the floor. He's been bitten numerous times at this point. And he finally reaches up and turns the thing down, and then he springs up and he's a zombie, and he goes and like stands next to zombie Joel McHale, who's like texting with his zombie thumbs. And then, like, you know, the air conditioner comes on, everybody starts cooling off, everybody starts de-zombifying. And honestly, they could have stopped it right there, and I still would have kind of been okay. But then the army shows up, because I failed to mention a very crucial detail, and I feel bad about this. Earlier in the episode, I was talking about those army surplus rations. There's a scene right after that where the dean goes into his office and he's like talking on the phone with someone from the army surplus. And he's like, you know, we got some people. They're getting sick from the taco meat. And they're like, taco meat. And he's like, yeah, this tin that's marked. And he picks it up and there's a big like biohazard sign on it. And it's like, you know, what do you mean Project Alpha? And like, and it turns out it's like some army experiment to like make super soldiers, which is, does not belong in community. And then, I heard about that even before that, and I was still kind of okay, because it could have just been resolved with the air conditioning and everybody goes home. No, the army shows up and busts in the door and all have these little tiny spray cans of like, you know, roofies, and they all just spray everyone in the face. Everybody wakes up the next morning and they think they were just really hungover. They don't remember it happening. They don't remember anything. They've been like, they've had their minds wiped. And that's how it ends.
But you act like this is the first Halloween episode to buck the conventions of, like, the standard sitcom drama. Like, it's a Halloween episode. Aren't you supposed to sort of take it with a grain of salt anyway?
You're not the first person to level that at me. And, I mean, it's a damn good point. But I started thinking about other sitcoms that have been known for great Halloween episodes. The one thing I keep going back to is Roseanne. Everyone always says that Roseanne did the best Halloween episodes, you know. And she did, actually. She did some great ones. But none of them, like, actually... I think there was one where they did kind of go gimmicky, but it was within the context of the fact that this is not supposed to be a canon episode of our show. This is something that's just happening separate. You know?
Right.
This is just like, we're taking these characters and supplanting them in this, you know, weird universe. It's like, you know, Treehouse of Horror on The Simpsons. That's a good example. Like, that's an example of, these are their characters that, you know, live in this universe, and they're going to do something that they won't do any other time of the year. They're going to do this thing that's crazy, and Homer's going to get cloned, or, you know, Bart's going to have an evil twin. You know, they're going to do that, and that's fine. But that's the sense. I mean, it's a cartoon, that's what kind of helps.
So I think your problem, then, is that they're trying to place it within the context of the rest of the show.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really seem to make any sort of sense when they're saying this is part of the established community universe.
Exactly. Like, I don't appreciate the idea that, you know, in this show's canon, there was a night where the army stormed Greendale Community College and everybody was zombies. And I'm just like, I'm not going to accept that. I'm not going to accept that. That's bullshit. And it bugged me to no end. I'm sure you saw all my distressed tweets and Facebook statuses where I was like, my heart is breaking. Why? I kind of wish this show had been canceled before season 2. 24 hours later, I was feeling a little bit better. You know, I got over it. And I'm willing to give it, you know, another chance because, you know, there's a new episode coming on Thursday. And I'm willing to give it another chance because the episode is coming on Thursday. It looks like it's classic Community, where it's just, you know, the issues in the community college and people being wacky and Abed making references. Just good old times. But I'm begging you, Dan Harmon, I know you're not listening, but I'm going to do it anyway. Stop. Just fucking stop, okay? Modern Warfare and contemporary American poultry were amazing. And you want to know why they were amazing? Because they were 2 out of 25 episodes of season 1. 2. All the rest of the episodes were still entertaining. They were, you know, above that, but it was because they were so rare that it was great. You know, it's not just the fact that this episode, you know, is going into canon, it bothers me because of the logic issues. It's a matter of the fact that this season has just been very clearly trying to top last season, and not in a logical way. Just topping for the sake of topping. And I don't like that. So, boom.
Snap.
I mean, I already knew about this, but, like, the Christmas episode is going to be stop motion in the style of, like, Rudolph. Which, I'm okay with, and I'm about to pull out a reference that's going to make everybody go, what? The Nanny. You remember The Nanny with Fred Drescher?
Yes, I
do. One season, they did an animated Christmas special. Like, you know how the opening sequence of that show was animated?
Yes.
They did an animated Christmas special called Oi to the World, because she's Jewish.
Right.
And it was in the animation style of that, the opening sequence, and it was all the same people doing the voices. And it was, but it was, you know, not within canon. It was just a thing that happened. You know, the freaking Sheffield kids did not really meet Santa Claus. You know, it was just, right. It was just a cartoon. So, like, you know, a stop motion Rudolph style episode of Community, I can get behind that if, you know, they're not talking about the things that happened in it like it really happened, like, two episodes later.
Right.
Like, that's the other test, is whether or not the repercussions of this episode, of the zombie episode, are going to be felt in future episodes. Because if anyone brings it up, I'm going to get pissed. Like, I'm more willing to accept, like, your argument, and a lot of people have already given the thing about, you know, Halloween is the time to go crazy. I'm more willing to accept that if they truly don't ever talk about it again. Like, I know they kind of, you know, helped that go bond smoothly by giving everybody those, you know, spray roofies, you know, and that will help people forget. But, but, you know, it's Community. You never know. I'm just saying, like, I just felt like they betrayed everything that show is supposed to be.
Right.
It was the same kind of rage and disappointment I felt going between the pilot of Glee and everything else since. Which is why I stopped watching that shitty, shitty abortion of a television show. So, sleep on that, America. Nick, you seriously have not talked much. I feel like I've just been doing oratories and I feel bad about it.
It's all right. It's your show.
Your show. No, it is your show, too.
Well, perhaps next time I will have more to say. I rather like listening to your little rants, though.
I've been told my rants are somehow entertaining.
They are entertaining.
Because they're like, oh, Jeff, you just get angry about this sort of thing. which is, I mean, I can see the entertainment value. I see it. I can see the entertainment value. But, I mean, I hate, like, it feels weird having to say this about oneself. Feels like you don't have the right to say this, and probably I don't, but you know me. I'm, for the most part, I'm very much an optimist.
Right.
You know, I don't dole out the hate and anger that often. I mean, it may seem like it because these people have to hear about it on the air, but I don't really. Like, I mean, there are certain things in this world that bug me, certain things I get just disappointed by, but for the most part, I'm really optimistic. I want to see the best in everything, and I just, you know, but sometimes it doesn't happen. And I'm suddenly realizing, you know, you've got to go do your thing.
Yeah.
And we didn't cover the other topic I had in mind. That's fine, though, because the other thing would take at least a half an hour to just explain.
Right. Well, we could either, pause and then resume when I get back. Or we can just record another episode.
We could record another episode. You know, I mean, this is a decent length episode, and we said a lot of stuff. You didn't say much. They won't know about that for a week.
No, they won't. But we know about it.
We
now.
Already know about it because yeah. Podcast time travel.
I do apologize for not speaking, listeners.
I
sort of just was sitting here like, Jeff's going into one of his rants. Oh, shit!
It's like, what? Are you Patton Oswalt's dog?
No.
Oh. Okay. Totally work. it's like my excitement about the Regal Entertainment roller coaster a few weeks ago.
Oh yeah, I love that thing.
Do 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 do. Welcome to Regal Entertainment. Oh shit! crazy. I'm blowing out the speakers like a motherfucker. Let's close this out.
All right.
And perhaps if I still feel like talking about that other topic, which was political, which is why on the little promotion on the Facebook group, I was like, we're gonna talk politics. There was a political topic that may or may not be covered, because it kind of loses its relevancy tomorrow.
Right.
Because we're recording this on November 1st, November 2nd. I hope you voted, folks. If you knew who the candidates were in your local area, I don't pay near enough attention to
those candidates. I'm just going to do a straight Democratic ticket.
I thought about doing that, but I'm actually kind of feeling guilty about it.
Why?
Not that I would vote Republican in any way. As I've said many times before, I'm not really a part of any party, but I'm especially not Republican.
Right.
I don't know if I'd have time to go into this. There's part of me that's thinking about not voting. And not in that, you know, oh, apathy, brr, what's the point, brr. In just in a way that I feel kind of like I don't know enough about the candidates
to make an informed decision.
And I don't want to, like, you know, I don't want to vote for someone who could do a bad job because I don't know what's up. I'll get it. There's a mosquito in the room.
Wow.
That brought the show to a screeching halt.
Yeah.
I apologize. I feel bad because I know that the just letting that pass without explanation, my whole thing about voting, just then is going to ruffle some feathers. But I don't mean that as an apathetic person or as a person who doesn't, you know, feel that voting is important. I mean as a person who I just don't feel like, not the fact that I don't know the candidates, I don't feel like it should be in my hands.
Right.
Because I feel like that would be kind of dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't want to take that chance. I might do it. I might not. I'm debating. It could happen. Although the truth of the matter is I'll be traveling tomorrow, probably while the election is happening, and I probably won't get home until polls are closed. So that's just the way it goes, you know. Obama 2012.
Yes.
There we go.
Anyway, I've got to go do my thing.
You've
got to
go do your thing. Watch me do my thing. I've got to do my thing. There's an immature song from all that. Anyway, I don't know why that just happened. Well, Nick, you got to go do your thing. I'm not going to sing that song again.
Okay.
That was the OUP for this week. I'm Jeff Hedley.
I'm Nick Melton.
Go experience 7 days. Good night. Raisin Brahms?
Raisin Brahms.
Raisin Brahms.